Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
So what I wanted to do was I wanted to close out the holiday, and so did he, and talk about a bunch of stuff. We are going to start out, you know, as a lot of podcasts do, starting with what we were playing right now. There's some reasons for that, especially as the holiday's sort of slower in December. So first thing, what are you playing exactly, Matt?
I am still on Final Fantasy 15. I have other games to review and begin. I can't bring myself to just pull away from it. I think part of it's because, number one, with the games I'm going to be reviewing on my channel before the year concludes are Dead Rising 4 and The Last Guardian, possibly Steep. I'm still unsure about Steep. But since they're already late, and I know from my viewer base, the only people who are going to be watching are people who want to either A, hear my opinion, or B, fortify their own, I've decided, okay, I actually have time for once where I can just really get invested in a game. I don't feel the need, and I just made a video about this, to as a YouTuber, I'm sure you can relate as well, to be modern, you know, because there's not this push right now to be so, because it's the holidays, all the games are out. So I've actually been able to just fully invest myself in one game and just do everything I possibly can. So I'm at about 65 hours in Final Fantasy 15, which is, I'd say, a decent amount in the short period of time it's been out. And I'm absolutely loving this game. It's flawed. I've mentioned that in my review. It definitely has a set of flaws. But for people who are saying it's not a Final Fantasy game, it just baffles me, because it most certainly is. It's just, it's, there's so much to love about it that I'm not having an issue looking past its flaws. Like, I know they're there. There's a lot of issues with the open world and traveling around. I think that's a bit of a janky system, but you know, I'm able to look past it because there's a lot of good there, and they did a great job with what a lot of games disregard is no new game plus content. And Final Fantasy 15 really prioritized that. So there's a ton of new dungeons and quests to accept and weapons to unlock, which is what the fun is of a Square Enix JRPG, I feel. It reminds me of Kingdom Hearts in a way. And so, yeah, that's what I've been playing. I've really been enjoying Final Fantasy 15, and I'm looking forward to playing different games, but right now I'm having a lot of fun just being involved in one game and saying, like, this is it. I'm just going to put everything I got into this and really get my time in this.
Yeah, dude, we talk about it on Twitter a lot, especially in messages where we'll be like, you know, what game are you playing? What game are you reviewing? Oh, I'm moving to this, I'm moving to that. And the feeling of being able to sit down, I sat down, strangely enough, in Dead Rising, and I'm not quite sure why. But I mean, you can see, like, in my review, the first 20 seconds of my review, the thing pops up and says, like, you have completed the game. And I wanted to do that because I know a lot of people are like, I bet you didn't complete it. And I actually had somebody.
Yeah, I started doing the same thing. Right in the beginning of Final Fantasy 15, I had the certificate of completion. I'm like, shut the fuck up. I beat it. Stop.
Somebody still didn't see that and posted. But what happened for me is the same thing. I decided, let's sit back down into a game. And I got this little bit of window and played. And it's not as good as Final Fantasy 15, but I do like Dead Rising, you know, it's got its issues. But let's compare them for a second, or not compare them, but discuss a couple things. What is the one thing that you, and it has to be distinct. We can't say theme or something. What's the one thing that, like, brings you back to Final Fantasy 15?
I think it's because I know the game does a good job of making it worth my time. You know, these secret new game plus dungeons have good weapons at the end of them, and new bosses that you don't see. They're not just, for the most part, there are some, I guess you could say, reskins, but they usually have new moves and stuff. It doesn't feel lazy, and I think that's really important. So for me, it's, I know I'm getting something new around every corner, whether it's a new weapon, enemy, boss, just something different. And so I really can get behind that. And so that's what's really pulling me in, is that additional content that I know is not just being rehashed, but actually innovating.
Yeah. I would say with Dead Rising 4, for me, it's holiday theme. I'm a sucker for, like, Bully. We're going to talk about that actually in the future part of this podcast. So I don't want to, I won't use Dead Rising 4 as my example of a holiday game, but it does. I'm a Christmas freak. And so, like, There is something funny about killing somebody with, like, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer as a lance or something like that. And you're like, that's fucking cool. And Anarchy. So it's weird because I find them both mindless. And I don't know if you agree on this. So this is just me talking out my ass. But I find Final Fantasy 15 and Dead Rising 4 strangely mindless in the fact that I can play them. And yes, I may die occasionally because I push it too far or something like that. But there, what I mean is I can just explore and just like do stuff without having to be like, I'm absolutely focused, and
no, you're right.
I like that, they're easy fun, but they pay back and they reward you even more so if you do take them serious. So you can get in both levels.
I agree with that. Cause there's a lot of decompression moments and I gained appreciation for those types of times from Bethesda games where you're just exploring, and it's that time in between that you're appreciating. It's not just you're highlighting the action moments, the story moments. It's that, for example, in Final Fantasy 15, when you're in the car and you're just driving around. A lot of people had an issue with that where they thought, I just want to get there fast. I want to fast travel there. And you can fast travel through the car, but towards the beginning of the game, it's just a lot of driving. And for me, I just enjoyed that moment where I wasn't fighting. I was actually having a breather and just taking in the environment. That completely changes up a lot throughout the open world, and I can really get into that. It definitely captures that good feeling of you see that, you can go there. And so for me, I that's what I really like too, is that just that calmness sometimes in between battles where, yeah, you can just zone out, and I could go on my phone while I'm in the car and,
right.
Send out a couple of texts. It's, like you said, it rewards you if you're in it for like the money, but you can also just casually play it, relax a little bit, and still feel like you're getting your time's worth.
It's funny because you were talking about like the moments of respite or decompression in music. I always talk about in when I'm reviewing music, I talk about how a soundtrack needs to know when to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because silence, the absence of silence in some games is Michael Bay moments. And if I have 2,000 of those, it's all numb. Like I get numb. I'm like, whatever. Mm-hmm. What's weird, everything you described, and we talked about this on Twitter, everything you described reminds me of Dragon's Dogma, the exploration. And we talked, I was like, dude, there's something about it. I don't know. And we both said it in reviews. Yeah. There's something about this game that has it's a freakish Dragon's Dogma vibe, and it's weird. So many people on my review were like, dude, I did not think about that. But that is exactly what I like about this game.
And then when you hit them and it says break, it's like, oh, that's like Monster Hunter. Like you're breaking their bones and taking their parts. It's a mix of a lot of other games. It's really impressive that, because a lot of games, when they take inspiration, they almost directly steal, for lack of better words. Final Fantasy doesn't do that. You're not crawling on the monster's back like in Dragon's Dogma. It's just that it's got that similar feel to it. You can see where the inspiration comes from, but it does its own thing.
And I think, like Dragon's Dogma, I can jump into Dragon's Dogma and play for an hour and shallowly enjoy that or enjoy it at a deeper level, and that's the way Final Fantasy feels, of course, in different worlds.
Dead Rising 4, haven't had a chance to play it yet. The co-op mode, is that anything worth shaking your head? Yeah, I was gonna say,
dude,
like, I don't know why they got rid, because the co-op campaign in Dead Rising 3 is so good. Why change that? I feel like they're going to patch it, but
it hurts my soul to even, dude. So we're both old enough to remember the awesomeness of couch co-op. And it's like, I get that some games don't want to do it. Cause graphically, somebody will show a picture of the split screen and go, that's the graphics. And it will never look as good as a single player game when a split screen. And I get that. And I've talked to developers who are like, our sole reason for not including couch co-op or co-op is because graphically we cannot keep up. And I get that, but I'm telling you right. And I get that this one runs so much better than 3. So if anybody's like, it's because it needs to run better. It does. That's true. 4 is slick and smooth compared to 3. It's ridiculous how much better it runs. However, it doesn't matter because you then have it in the fucking if you can do it in the multiplayer, just let me do it in the story, because they tried to tell me, oh, it's because Frank West's story, or Hank East, whichever one you're following, his story matters so much. And I'm like, you know what? If you had told me that Maddie could play as Hank East and I played as Frank West, I'd shit my – I would love
it.
Doppelganger Frank running around.
The thing that never has made sense to me about Dead Rising is you have this ridiculous world, ridiculous scenario, wacky weapons – everything's weird, but they try to tell this really serious story, which I can say, you look at 2, for example, Dead Rising 2 story, I think did work. But
true, yeah.
Outside of that, like, if they had this ridiculous, stupid story and gave me stupid reasons for doing things, which a lot of the quests really in that in Dead Rising 3, I remember specifically, encouraged. Stupidity almost. The fun right. stupid, I mean. So it's like, why would they use story reasons to say we couldn't do co-op? Because it seems like they're so torn upon whether or not they want to take it seriously or just joke around and have fun with the universe they've created. I feel like they're trying to strike a Borderlands 2 where it's like, this is ridiculous, but also there's like moments in Borderlands 2 where you're really just engrossed in that story and you're like, wow, this is good. This is good
stuff. Do you know what's weird? You were talking about copying, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I wish some companies just didn't worry about copying, didn't worry about looking at Borderlands, because Dead Rising isn't Borderlands, right? Dead Rising should have just done whatever they wanted to do, and in a way, I am actually saying that what they did, even though I don't agree with it, is right. So in a way, I want to say I applaud them. They chose to do it their way.
Sure.
However, they didn't. It doesn't feel like they gave a reason to where you and I could sit in a podcast and say, I get it from a technical aspect because they do want it to run well and they don't want the bad press of, and we know this, people, for example, Dunkey, I love his videos. He does YouTube videos. I love them, but he jokes and he finds the worst parts of every game and he puts them in a compilation. And he did that for Dead Rising. He's done it for Last Guardian. And even he will say, guys, these are just like, I'm a joke reviewer. Like these are jokes, but people take it deadly serious. And you get that fake news out there. So I get why they did it, but I really do wish they sort of had just laid it on the line because, dude, the game would have been – it really would have been more enjoyable. And I think that would have impacted a couple of the ideas that they put into Dead Rising that didn't work. For example, it's not that hard, dude. It's – to say that this game is easy is – I can't even give you a comparison. It is like you and
just,
I
like, – stand there and the AI just doesn't even attack you?
It does, but it does almost no damage. It's – you know, I talk about this. I've tested MMOs before, and I'm sure you have, or gotten into a beta. We've talked about getting into betas.
Yeah, so actually, yeah.
Sure. So you have to patch a beta's balance. You have to say this weapon isn't doing enough. Well, here's what's weird. They don't do enough damage. They just don't. And you have AI that will shoot you 40, 50 times, and you're still alive. So there's definitely something wrong there with the balance. And I think that... I think it's structurally got a couple issues, which is why I had to rate it, you know, as a weight, because there was just enough little issues there that I was like,
that adds up.
It's funny though that we both have played and reviewed almost all the same games. So what we wanted to talk about is like a holiday game. We have some of the same likes, so there's a chance we're going to double up on this. But as we come into this holiday, we almost always have a holiday game that we sort of return back to. Yeah. And we wanted to talk about this prior. So what's yours and why? Or what's this year's if it changes, yeah. I guess.
This year, I mean, what I want to do is before Christmas, wrap up all the games I want to review. And I forgot what games I put on my Christmas list. Because, yes, I am 21, so I still make them. And I think I wanted a PSVR and stuff like that. But to tell you the truth, what I really am thinking of fondly right now that I can see myself playing over the holidays is because I like to carry my games with me, so I do enjoy the handheld gaming.
Right.
And recently, Darkest Dungeon was on sale on the Vita. And I had not played Darkest Dungeon. I've just heard really good things. I couldn't even begin to try to describe the game. I don't even know how to explain it. I know there's like... you go deeper and deeper into this procedurally generated dungeon and you get more loot, but also like your characters in your group can like develop psychological problems and stuff. And it's something along those lines. It's really different sounding though. And I'm really looking forward to diving into that over the holidays and just having that experience. I don't think it's anything I'll spend hours endlessly on, but I'm really looking forward to playing that, kind of hanging out on the couch next to the tree. That's kind of what I envision and what I enjoy about the holiday games, as I like to call them. But yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to most. I'm curious to hear what you're looking to dive back into, or perhaps for the first time.
Well, I'll tell you what, you just, so that game I loved and I reviewed it, dude, okay. you're in for a fucking treat.
Good.
That's big great. Time. Like that game is, it,
nothing
it is
better than finding a game on the backlog that you know is going to be beast.
Yeah, and you were like, I don't know if I'll spend a lot of hours, and I was laughing because I was like, I don't know if you know like what happened, dude. Wait until you, yeah, I won't even say anything.
Okay.
Did you buy it, or you just?
I bought it. It was actually on sale during, I think it was a Black Friday sale or a Cyber Monday sale, and it was like $10. I thought, why not?
So. Yeah, dude, you're gonna be so happy. I mean, okay. I can't wait to hear. We're gonna have to talk about that because I didn't know you liked those type of games, to be honest, mm-hmm. and I didn't know. I guess I did. So I was fascinated.
Plus
by
the thing, it looks really different too. So I'm curious to see what it plays like and everything. So
yeah, for sure. For me, it's going to be, I always play Bully. Yes, I am a narrative freak, just like you. We both like KOTOR. So I will finish KOTOR 1 and 2, usually in 2 days. It's every winter, I stay up and I play the first half of KOTOR and then the second half in the second day. So usually like 25 hours the first night. That's not even a night. That's a,
it's a night and an hour.
And then Jade Empire. So I always
that's
do KOTOR.
That's one I gotta play.
Yeah, I mean, I remember talking to the doctors. I talked to Ray, I think, when I was at, because that was in E3. And I was like, what game do you want to, you know, would you want to make? And he's like, he goes, Jade Empire. He's like, I know we're supposed to like Mass Effect, but, and this is the doctor, Jay, Ray. And he was like, you know, Jade Empire is just fantastic to him. So if you get a chance, yeah, you should check it out. Right. And then I'll play Bully. I always like to do those narrative ones, and a Bully has the Halloween/Christmas thing in it. Mm-hmm. So I feel that's sort of cheating, but there's something about them. You're right. Like there's always some winter game where for some reason, Sims, strangely enough, I have,
that's one I didn't expect.
So you're talking to somebody who's bought every Sims 3 and Sims 4 expansion. So I've probably got, you know, $500-$600 in the Sims.
Wow.
And what happens is I am probably as Cadiz once said, there is no one ever who should watch you play Sims because it is quite literally the worst psychological test you will ever experience. Because I do things that are so nefarious in Sims, and I'm talking about stuff I don't even want to admit because people think I'm just evil. But some of the stuff I do in Sims, like sleep with somebody and then break up with them the next day and then go out.
And then
destroy doors when people are inside, which everybody's done before. But I do some crazy evil stuff in Sims. And I love open sand world. I love to just like, I'm buying a house and I'm, what happens if I don't give somebody a bed and the entire floor is a swimming pool? Like, what will this person do? Like, you know, so.
Yeah, that's actually a series I've never given a whirl, believe it or not. I think I played.
Oh, wow.
Here's how obscure it is that I played one Sims and I remember I borrowed it. My friend came over a day and he's like, hey, try this out. And it was the Sims on the Game Boy Advance.
Mm-hmm.
And I specifically remember one moment where like my guy had to pee. And, like, he'd, like, hold his hands and, like, jump around and stuff to let you know he had to go. It was just, I mean, I was like, how old was I, like, 9 or something?
Yeah, you had to have been. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was so weird for me at the time. But, like, it's one of those series that I want to get into. It reminds me of Civilization in the way where right. they're not alike. I don't or maybe they are, but in the time sink sort of way where it's like, I can't just put 15, 20 hours into this. I got to put hundreds into this game to really get all I can out of it. But it's interesting you say Bully. That's my favorite Rockstar game.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Not that I don't like GTA. GTA 5 is definitely a close second.
LA Noir. LA Noir. I know
LA Noir is great too. But Bully is just. I don't know how to word it without sounding like a douche, but it's just relatable in this weird way. Just the stuff you see in the game, it's like, wow, I have seen that before. And sometimes it's over exaggerated for comedic effect, but it's such a unique idea. And it's a shame, but it's also a possibility we'll see another one. But I don't think we will, just because of the way society is today, that I don't think we'll see a Bully 2, because I just don't think I think there's a lot of gamers who will get offended by it and upset with the game, where back then when it was made, it was in this ironic kind of
rebellious
cheesy tone, like, yo, I'm Jimmy, I'm the bully, you know, and he kind of turns into this nicer guy and cares for people and he's got this softer side. It's very cliche in a strange way, but I just don't see, because of the way Rockstar does their games, you look at how GTA 5, it had a lot of interesting cultural themes in it. And even those tested some boundaries, and it makes you wonder if they did a Bully 2, how that would go over, where I feel like they could pull it off. They'd be the company to do it, but at what expense, right? Maybe that's just the way I'm thinking. I could be wrong. I'd love to be wrong, because I want to see another Bully so bad.
No, I mean, I think I think maybe this is the honest truth. I think also because we're both YouTubers, we see something slightly different than actual gamers don't. What I mean by actual gamers is most of my friends are not YouTube / forum ready. They don't go to forums. They just buy their games. There's a commercial. They maybe check a little bit of news. Those people would probably be totally fine with it. Yeah. But I do think that the people like you and me and some of our followers, it's easier for them to collect hates. It's easier for them to remember slights. It's easier for them to remember offensiveness than sometimes somebody who's away from it. And they just see it as an interesting thing. Hmm. And a lot of the people I talk to are blown away when I say, hey, this came up on my channel. And they're all, why the fuck would that come up? Why would that even be a thing? And I'm all, oh, shit. Yeah, you're right. Because they're different. The group that knows about these things many times is much smaller, though it appears larger because it's vastly vocal.
Yeah.
And
no, it's a great point. I didn't even think of it that way.
I have a 400 person land group I've been involved with since Icewind Dale on the PC. So I don't know how many fucking years ago that was. And they're just a completely different, they're a completely different animal. They're an animal that's more like, does this look fun versus socially, is it now acceptable or not? So when you say the thing that you said where you're like, I don't know about this and that, I'm totally in agreement with you. But then in the back of my head, there's one particular friend that's very vocal in this group that I know he'd be like, who the fuck cares? What the fuck?
My opinion would be that, who the fuck cares? It's a game,
But we see that others do care and they're vocal about it. And so what you're saying is the worry that those vocal ones cause a problem. And I agree. If there's a game from Rockstar, I won't really.
Do I want to stick my head in that anthill almost,
Where let's bring up a really bad comparison. Here's a really bad comparison for you. In a weird way, Trump doesn't need the money from other people, so he says and does what he wants to everybody's utter hatred, or if you like him, you like him. In a way, Rockstar has so much money that I do believe Rockstar could say, fuck you, we're going to make a game about and could put anything as that protagonist and get away with it and not worry. Rockstar is at a weird level, dude.
I'll never forget how someone I've said this a couple of times before, mm-hmm. but someone posted the stats. I think it was sales in May of 2016.
I know what you're going to say.
And GTA 5 was the leading sales game. I'm like, this game came out how many years ago? And it's number one in sales this month. That's insane. That's some serious money. It's a surprising amount of people who haven't played the game, I guess. But I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of people, because that month Doom launched, Ratchet and Clank. I think around that time, Quantum Break was April, I believe. But, there were so many games that came out around that time that were good games.
Should have been number one, or that we would have thought would be number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really shocking, especially Doom. You think Doom would run away with that.
Right, for sure. I mean, of any game. But I mean, I think that's what's weird. We also have different nations. I have the international podcast, and those two guys are from Europe. And their discussions about sex and stuff are the way we discuss violence. And so we're okay with violence, but not, in America's media, there's some issues with sex. They're okay with sex, but they have some issues with violence. And so that's why I have them on the channel, because when we talk, I'll say something, I'll be like, oh, well, over here, it's completely different. And I think the same thing exists between what you and I know and what we experience sometimes vocally, and then what is actually out there. For example, I have a lot of people say, I hate Call of Duty, I'll never buy it, it's terrible. And even though this one did worse than the prior ones, every other game company in the world would love the sales of this one. You have to sit back and be like, some of it's relative. It would be bully for me. Holiday games are cool, dude. There's something about them. Yeah. And it's funny that you and I both have a Rockstar BioWare fetish that I'm openly admitting to, but I think that's where you and I I think it was talking on a podcast, actually, one of our first podcasts where we were just discussing back and forth, and we were like, holy shit, I like that game too.
I think it was our first or second one. We were just well, okay, hold on.
Yeah, this is weird. And then what I wanted to talk about is so I'm always asked this, and I'm absolutely sure, because I've follow your Twitter, and you're asked it constantly. At least once a week, we get something like, what's the advice, blah, blah, blah. And I give advice on the Twitter occasionally or to patrons, but one question I keep getting is, what have I learned this year as a YouTuber or somebody in the business? Do you want to go first? Do you have something that I like, or do you want to wait and I can go first?
Yeah, I learned two things. First thing is that it's very easy to get wrapped up in numbers on YouTube, but truth be told, this site's a roller coaster. I will be on the top of the world 1 month, and I will be at the bottom of the barrel the next month, and then I'll go average, and then bottom of the barrel, and then on top of the world. It's up and down constantly, where it's very easy to get caught in the motions. But I've learned to, I want to say, let go of that care of numbers, because tell you the truth, that's my paycheck. I kind of have to care to some degree. But, you know, I've taken a different stance where I've realized, you know, with these algorithm changes on YouTube and stuff, this site's going to constantly transform regardless of what I do. So it's best if, you know, when they're doing these changes that are damaging a lot of YouTubers' views, that maybe I just do content that I really enjoy, because the only people who are going to be tuning in anyway are the ones who really care about my channel. And it's been working, you know. Views have been down, but also I've been enjoying myself a lot more, but yet things are starting to stabilize again. So, I mean, for me, I've learned just don't get caught up with that stuff. It's very easy to, even the amount of times I remind myself, it's still very easy to. But the other thing I learned this year was that, you know, I used to think that these PR from these companies and stuff, that you're friends with them, but I mean, you're friends with them, but they're not like buddy-buddy friends, like they're not going to do you a favor type friends, which was kind of a naive line of thinking for me. Probably just because I try to see the best in people and things at all times, not like super optimistic way. I am realistic, but I just, you know, try to give people the benefit of the doubt. And when you kind of learn that it's more of a business thing, which you totally get, it's like, okay, so I see how this is going to be. I think I need to change my perspective on things. So for me, I kind of made a 180 recently, where I'm like, not that I didn't beforehand, but it's like now for sure the priority is 100% the viewers. It's like, you know, I'm not going to burn bridges, but, you know, it's more important to serve them than these companies.
Yeah, right.
That's what I learned. Is I was so focused on term networking and making connections that I might have lost sight a little bit on who got me to that point. And so I think it's important to focus and serve the consumers like I've always tried to, but not try to blend the two. Not try to sit in that. What I'm saying is I've always tried to sit in that lukewarm area.
Sure,
between
yeah.
the two, but I think now it's like, okay, viewers definitely need to get the priority. I'll email these people and talk to them and try to get what I need to get done, but it's because of them. You know what I'm saying? So those are two things I've learned this year when it comes to YouTube and gaming.
I can say I definitely saw that change.
Yeah.
Because when you and I first talked, I breath of fresh air to have somebody that, and you not naive, you were never naive, but that optimistic. And I was like, wow, okay. And then, like, you know, a couple times we've talked and there's been a snafu here or there, and you just slowly were like, I think I'm seeing a little bit of a different writing on the wall.
Yeah.
Mine are strangely, in a weird way, I have two, and they're in an odd way, they're a little bit connected. First of all, I guess mine is proof of something. And the proof that I had was that I don't believe in collaboration. I believe in more like what we're doing. Like, hey, come on and we'll talk about it. Collaboration to me has this dirty fuck. It's almost like influencer. I don't want to hear it. Like, I don't like the word. And so to me, I think the one thing that I learned, or that was proved wrong or right, was that, like, the more people that you do talk with on YouTube and the more good relations you have, the absolute 100%, 1 million percent chance of things being better. Mm-hmm. And even if they can't always help you, or they maybe, you know, you have a rival video, because I've had people on the channel who are also reviewing stuff. One of the things I've found is that I get more whatever, positive whatever, by saying, hey, go check this other, you know, Cosmic Engine, go check Matt, go check Dreamcast Guy. I get more positive from that than I could ever by even being the best review, like the best review. It's weird. So, like, yeah. Somebody may say, oh, I don't like this, or I didn't like that from your review. And it's like, hey, go check out this guy. And so I guess the thing I would say that I learned is that it is proof positive that you don't have to collaborate. You can, and network is also a weird way. I actually genuinely consider, though you and I have never met, I genuinely consider you, Cosmic Engine, Skilled, unfortunately, he's no longer around, Go Burns, as like friends, like people I would, and that doesn't mean that at times you won't not be able to, like, well, I don't know where that would ever come up, but if something came up and you were doing a NDA on a game that no one else was, whatever, that doesn't mean you can't, you know, that you would tell somebody something you're not supposed to. But what it means is that you guys can, like, share in the positivity of games, and it will not hurt your channel. And I think that some people think that it will. Some people think that there's a viewer out there who has one chance to watch one review. Bullshit. Those people are watching 50 reviews. So if you think that you're going to steal a review video, I've even had people who say, I watch your video first, Carrick, but then I watch somebody else's to see if I just, you know, and it's like, exactly. You're not stealing. So in a way, I would say that that has grown, and I absolutely love that was sort of held true.
It just shows that for lack of better words, just befriending people, and I think the best way to say it is just like working together in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always beneficial. You know, obviously we've collaborated. Jada used the word. We've collaborated.
No, it's okay
a ton
to use it. It's
this,
just I don't
this year. I did a Let's Play with Fighting Cowboy, who's like a Souls YouTuber strictly. He does a lot of playthroughs, but you know, mainly known for Souls content. You know, because I used to think to myself, all right, like, I am Bethesda, I must stay within those confines, and I spent like an entire year just collaborating in that little community, befriending all of them, and we're still friends, and we all still talk. It's this nice little community. But once I spread out of that, I started noticing all these different viewers who came in for me, not just my Bethesda. And I realized at that point, I was like, huh, there's actually, and this sounds stupid to say, it almost sounds like a lack of confidence, but it's not. It's just more so I always thought, okay, people like me for my Bethesda stuff. Yeah, that's fine. That's what I think of myself as. But then I've realized over this year that it's like, you know what? People seem to care about what I have to say about a lot of different games. So take the ball and run with that. But yeah, what I'm saying in a long-winded response is I totally agree that, just working together and just being friends is really beneficial, which is why I never really viewed YouTube as like a business, because just hanging out and talking is just as beneficial.
Yeah, and that is something that like I picked up. And the other thing is this, and you and I have discussed this, and I think in a way you sort of just covered it prior to me giving my answer. But one thing I have learned I already knew this, and people sort of get mad at me for this, but the fact is you have to really understand. And only pay attention, especially in critique. Be careful who you listen to, because I had a YouTuber who a couple months ago was like, hey, I'm thinking of switching my channel, blah, blah, blah. And they gave me all these good reasons. And it's funny enough, because Aaron Sorkin, who's the writer of West Wing, is doing a masterclass, which is a website you can go to, and they teach a class, and he's teaching a class on writing. And one of the things he was talking about is experts in the field. And he said this, he said, when I walk into my doctor and I tell the doctor that when I raise my hand above my head, it starts to hurt, and I think you should do the surgery with this technique, and I think you should use these tools, his hope is that the doctor stopped listening at, it hurts when I raise it above my head, because by that point, he is now the expert. So when I have people tell me you should slow down, or tell me I should not cuss, or tell me I should not, I've been told don't collaborate with others. Like, I've been told it distinctly. People are like, don't, in every way, shape, or form, metrics do not prove that right. Every single time metrics, so people, you should switch this. And I'm like, guys, I have metrics. You have metrics. We see the numbers. Like, I can see walk off where somebody walks away from the video. I can totally see that. I can see all these things. And I think it makes sense to listen to the users, but in a way of like, what are they watching? Because sometimes somebody will indicate, I'm going to be honest, I think some people are a little bit dishonest. They'll watch something, but then like have a lot of complaints about it, but they're still watching it. And you need to
spin it into their vision almost.
Yeah. And you need to decide which is worth more, like them continually coming and discussing, even if it's a little bit antagonistic, or it's changing just for them, because changing just for them may make it so that, as Maddie just said earlier, whether you enjoy it or not, because if you do not enjoy what you're doing, people will fucking sniff it out. I have had people who have said, in that podcast, you seemed blah, blah, blah. And for the most part, they're wrong. But there have been the occasional times where somebody said, it seemed like this and that. And I'm like, that fucker sniffed that out.
Yep. I've had like, that. I've had that one specific podcast episode many months ago. Yeah. Someone sniffed me out and was like, he seemed kind of pissed at that guy. I was like, whoopsies.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. So I think that is what I've learned, even bigger than, you know, than working with people, because I knew that. But that fact of like, if you're a YouTuber or doing whatever you do, man, you got to watch out to who you're listening to, because everybody is a critic, but not everybody is an expert. Otherwise, no one would be doing
it. I mean, the most common thing I see as a piece of criticism that'll sometimes make a YouTuber panic is when they're, you know, the vintage comment when your videos are not exploding out the gates is, well, the channel's dying. you know, people always jump to that. They're like, Maddie, I think the channel's dying. I'm like, dude, I see these numbers every month. This is fine. Like, I am doing great. What are you seeing? Because they just see a week's worth of videos that, for me, will sit around the 10 to 20K range, which is standard average, instead of, you know, the week before that where I had a video go 160K and then the video before that was 250. Like, these insane explosions, the outliers almost. And people expect that with every video, this explosion. It's almost this, we were talking earlier about how people, when they critique games, they want you to almost destroy them.
It yeah, right.
Just be slight criticism. Right. Like, it's got to be tear it down. The same thing could be said for almost a positive outlook where they want your channel to succeed. But if they don't see that explosive success, like hundreds of thousands of views, thousands of subs a day, that you're not really succeeding. You know,
yeah.
It's no one really understands. It's you're just doing okay. You're doing fine. Things are good. That's it. So, yeah, I agree that you got to take criticism from the right place. And you can usually tell how when people word it, if they care about your channel and they want to give you just their feedback, or when they're saying, when they're like much younger, very different.
Yeah. Knee jerk reaction. Yeah. 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 I just think it's super important. I think if you're, you know, whether you're successful or not on YouTube, if you're not enjoying yourself, I mean, there's other things you can be doing. You
yeah,
know?
True.
There's definitely other things. And then we wanted to jump on to basically, or what I wanted to do is sort of talk about the last couple months and different games, because you and I have reviewed, you know, whether it be Gears, Forza, all those kind of things, and just sort of talk about a couple of them. And distinctly, I want to talk about like what you and I found that we didn't like as much as we thought. I think I want to start out with that one. Like, is there a game that you're like, man, you know, it may not have sucked, but this did not turn out the way I thought it was going to turn out.
Yeah, there's a good handful of them.
Go but for it.
I'm looking at my list, and
let's trade first, off and on. You do the first one.
All right, first one that comes to mind is ReCore.
I didn't even have that written, but yeah.
That one had a lot of potential, and I usually don't get sold by trailers as much anymore. But from what I saw from some of the gameplay, from the people who were working on it, the ideas they had, I thought, you know, this could be something like a real special indie game. Maybe it's quirks here and there. But it was just a complete failure, if I'm honest. It was very rough around the edges. It just didn't do the trick. The traversal, the backtracking, crappy combat. I mean, it just they really missed the ball on this one, where that was one of my first disappointments. And a lot of these, I know we're focusing on the fall, but a lot of these disappointments...
No, focus earlier if you've got one. Go for it.
But yeah, a lot of these disappointments really came, when I'm looking at my list, from this part of the year, which is I probably not too surprising given the complete flux of games coming out. But
sure.
Still, that's my first one, ReCore, for sure.
So I can't steal that, but I will say I agree. And it's funny because once again, you and I were on Twitter going, what's going on here? Oh, Jesus. For me... It goes back just like yours. It goes back a little farther for the first one, and that is it's Quantum Break. It Whoa. Guys, oh man,
really?
And I liked it. Don't get me wrong, but that game had so many technical weirdnesses with the way it did its anti-aliasing, the way it looked. It just looked dirty. It fell apart at times. I liked the story and I loved the movie. I watched the TV show and I was like all into it, but. I am an Alan Wake freak, man. Yeah, like I'm a Remedy series. And I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, but what I got was nowhere near what I thought I was going to get. And that's what's cool about, especially with me. I don't try to get too hyped up because it'll never, ever equal that. But I'm pretty good at separating church from state. So I'll go like, okay, this is what I was expecting. It's not, but is it still good? And a lot of people get pissed at me because they'll be like, it's not the same as it's supposed to, blah, blah, blah. So it's bad. And I'm like, nah, I have to review the $60 and what I'm holding. And dude, Quantum Break had some issues and it's one of the few where I had to step away for a while and go, what is it versus like what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Did you like Quantum Break?
I liked it a lot, tell you the truth. That's interesting. It's a we have complete polar opposites. I mean, well, actually not polar opposites, because you said you liked it a lot. Me, I was saying like, you know, this is probably one of Microsoft's best exclusives I played in a while. I couldn't think of any standout exclusives. The one before that was probably Sunset Overdrive. I really loved that. But Quantum Break, I had a deep appreciation for. I thought it was trying unique things, which I've always given Remedy a lot of credit for. They do try different things. Alan Wake is a great example of, you know, your main weapon's a flashlight. It's very different game. It's not horror, but it's creepy the whole time. You're this sense of dread. But it's not like a Shinji Mikami, The Evil Within type of survival horror. They're very good at what they do, and I really liked Quantum Break for that. Not to negate your opinion, of course, but I'm just saying that's interesting. I didn't expect that answer. I can say that I was a little disappointed with some of the difference in choices. There weren't as many drastic breaks. Changes, and it didn't feel like when I'd made a – how do I word it? Yeah, two branching paths, and you know, when I went down one path, it didn't feel like it was much different from the other one. It was that illusion of choice. So that was one issue I had, but that's an interesting pick.
Yeah, what's your next one?
Let's see here. This one I wasn't terribly surprised with, but I did expect better given the company developing it was the TMNT game, Mutants in Manhattan.
It fucking sucked.
I fucking teared into that game. That is hands down next to Far Cry Primal and
Don't you go there. And Did you not like Far Cry Primal?
I hated that game.
I'm going to reach through this fucking camera. Okay, I got to stop. Go for it. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm sorry.
They didn't even do the vintage Platinum games. This is a horrible story, but this combat's damn good. Like, they even fucking blew the combat somehow, which, as Platinum Games, blows my mind. Because I didn't realize there's two different Platinum Games. There's the Platinum Games who made Legend of Korra, TMNT. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Platinum Games who made...
Transformers
and Bayonetta. And so I'm looking at these two, and they're just night and day. And so I was expecting more along the lines of a Transformers treatment, where it wasn't the level of Bayonetta, but... right below it, where it was like true to the series, you know, good content, a little bit replayable for the fans, but this just fucking sucked. I'm sorry. It's very rare that I really get that aggressive about a game, but that's the one hands down game I tore into this year and just despised. And that's as someone who loves the series so much that I was trying my best to just fanboy my way out of it. And like, I'm going to look past all these flaws and love this game no matter what. Nope. Couldn't do it.
And what's funny is you've got the poster in the back. You know, you can obviously.
Yeah.
So my next one it's an MMO, and it still is loved, and I just do not like it. And it's Black Desert. Did you ever check out Black Desert?
I really wanted to try that. I've heard good things.
Dude, it's so strange because
not to interrupt you, is that the one with like the really big focus on like fighting, hand-to-hand combat almost?
And character creation. It's actually the biggest thing is the hot chicks in the character creation, sort of. Like,
yeah, I think I've seen them in YouTube thumbnails. Okay.
Yeah, so the thing about Black Desert to me is I feel, and this is just me, the ego that you occasionally may have as a person, I feel like somehow everybody else is fooled. And I'm Rowdy Roddy Piper and They Live with my special glasses that see all the fucking propaganda messages no one else can. Because to me, it is literally everything normal MMOs are, but they pretended it wasn't. And somehow everybody was just like, yeah, you're right, it's not. And it is. I mean, it's like the same, you know, you go out and there's hundreds of bad guys respawning in front of you. Like, and bear with me, by the way, I haven't played it in about a month or two months. So if it's changed... hats off to them, because we're going to talk about that in a bit here about games that have progressively got better and support. So that's possible. But upon me testing it and looking at it, to say I was dramatically, almost depressingly disappointed with that title would be an understatement. It was terrible. So what's your next one?
I'm going to, just for the sake of conversation, though, I'm definitely going with Far Cry Primal.
Don't say it.
Yeah, because I want to hear your thoughts more than my own again. But see, this is, at the time I reviewed this, I've never been a giant Far Cry fan. One of my favorites is probably 2, but that one got a little tedious. I'd say 3 stands out to me the most, like a lot of Far Cry fans. But Far Cry Primal, the thing is that I played that game a decent amount, but just, it felt like... it was trying so hard to be so many different games, which I just don't like to see. And a lot of games, I've realized this trend, where, for example, you're creating this village, quotes, heavy quotes, by, like, collecting certain things and helping out different members of your tribe, but you're not seeing the village really transform, and it's just, it's like you're almost unlocking cutscenes. Like, nothing's necessarily changing all that much. I think Far Cry wasn't, I want to say wasn't built for that universe, but I think it was a good idea for that universe, but it felt like, for the mechanics that Far Cry became known for, it didn't work out for the tools that Primal gave you.
Gotcha.
That's... You know, constantly scaling the wall with the grapple hook and just using spears. Here's a good one. I could break that combat any day of the week because of the, all you do is run around, eat some meat, and then, you know, you charge them with your spear again, and just keep looping that process where the combat could have been a good focal point to distinguish from the other Far Cry games, but it was just very janky, like poke, 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 gotcha, you know, that kind of shit. I don't expect much from a Far Cry story, but Primal's just, it's almost like the people who watch anime, and I'm one of them, who only watch sub, which is, you know, you're watching in Japanese, is I will watch sub, I will have no problem with sub, but if I can watch dub, I will get into it more because I am hearing and processing what's going
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely, right.
And so even if, and mind you, the emotion's important, so there are times I will pick sub over dub. But that's the same kind of issue I had going into Far Cry Primal, where they're talking in this language that, you know, amazing attention to detail there. That they created. Yeah, they created their own language for the game. That's awesome. But since I have no idea what they're saying, I'm just kind of, I'm reading. I'm not, and they didn't really have much emotion behind what they were saying, where it's almost like they didn't understand the language themselves. So I didn't really care. So I had a number of problems with the game. It's one of those games that you think about and you're like, oh, that game came out so long ago, and then you realize it came out this year. And,
Right.
So I don't even consider it part of the I don't even consider it part of the conversation until I look at my game list of games I beat in 2016. I'm like, what? Far Cry came out this year? Really? I feel so long ago. But that's one of my most viewed reviews, actually. A lot of people were pretty pissed off that I did not like that game at all, but a lot of people did agree with me. I don't know. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, though.
It's exactly so. A lot of people liked me or liked my video because I liked it, and a lot of people liked or hated my video because I liked it. I think that you know, they did some things that didn't help them, like using the Far Cry 4 map and then just adjusting height. So they basically took the Far Cry 4 map and then did some copies and adjusted the height map, which they could have done differently. Here's the thing. So I know a little bit about Primal's behind the scenes, sort of like the creation, and some of it was to get it prepared for the company to build their vision of the game. And one of the ways they did that was to take some shortcuts. Even though the map looked the same, it wasn't like the same hills. It was just the same, like, I don't know what you'd call it, outline. The game, so later on in the game, just so you know, you do change the camp. It does actually grow. You have diegetic music and non-diegetic music, which, like, for example, you might come down into an area and they're playing.
I over-exaggerate. Like, there definitely are some slight tweaks, but, like,
you wanted more.
I expected, maybe that's my level of expectation, perhaps, to be blamed.
No, it's totally fine, because I think what they did was they didn't go far enough. And you can tell that some things were not fleshed out the way a Far Cry New would have been done. So, no, I actually agree. The reason why I like it, I turned the HUD off. First thing is that game is probably my favorite no HUD game ever. And that means, you know, no HUD playing it and just exploring the game world. It's got some really cool aspects. I would say to me that combat, I didn't expect it to be amazing because they are cavemen. So, like, I did sort of expect poking because, like, I'm not quite sure there's a lot of ninja cavemen out there. So I get the idea of somebody wanting better combat, but they are just dudes who bash each other over the head. However, their combat sucks in the way that you can hit somebody and your weapon flies right through them, like Skyrim. Nobody likes lack of physics combat. So I absolutely, Primal is one of those games. I had to do a video later and tell people about Fun Factor because I felt that people weren't understanding some of my review scores. Because to me, if you and I are talking and you tell me you like a game that technically has issues, but because it was fun, you enjoyed it, I get it. But in a video, people don't. people notoriously cannot make the jump in logic. So if you and I are talking, let's say we turn this off and we're just talking about games, and you say, you know, Carrick, this game has this problem, but I really liked it because it was just fun. I would go, I get it. But when it comes to video reviews, people don't get it, because I think a lot of people think fun should be taken into account, but they also don't know how much and what you find fun. So Primal was just fun for me, but I don't see any issue with you using it in your list. Like, I get it, because I'm one of the few who liked it as much as I did. So I understand that I'm in the minority. My next one then would be, for games that I did not. So for games that I did not enjoy as much as I thought, but I still liked them, I will say Last Guardian is probably my last one. I liked Last Guardian enough to say it was a buy. It was easily you could replay it because there's some secrets in there. But it had some technical issues that I was really unhappy with, and I had a difficult time coming to grips with my score before I said it. You know, I do think it's worth a... So, like, when I buy something, I buy it. Whether a developer gives me a code, I still buy it. So, like, no matter what, when I say buy, that means I bought the fucking thing and I don't feel ripped off. Like, that's how I rate games. But it did have some issues. That camera is a bitch. And the problem is when your game is about grandeur and about spectacle, you don't want to impact the grandeur and the spectacle with a shit camera. And we see that in games, dude. Unfortunately, you and I have talked in the past about it. Like, there's games with bad cameras and their cameras.
Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah.
I love
the
game, but that's a terrible camera.
It's not a good camera. So, but that would be mine. In the fact that I wanted it to be better, I still liked it, but it was not the spectacle I assumed it would be upon release.
Especially with, it's not like Final Fantasy 15 where it kind of went over a tear it down and let's build from the ground up again type of process during its 10-year development. But, you know, you have The Last Guardian, which I can't properly critique because I haven't played the game. But from what you're telling me, I mean, this is a project that's been just straight worked on for so long.
Yeah.
To hear that it has such a, I won't say a minor issue, but an issue that you can see just like that in development.
Exactly.
Like, camera
exactly.
sucks. Camera exactly. sucks. We need to fix that. And the fact that they didn't fix that is just amazes me.
Yeah. What about you? Do you have any others?
Last one that I think you and I can agree on is definitely Mafia 3. I believe this is a game that is one of the most overlooked games of the year. It's definitely got some real power to it. It's got some really shining moments that you don't see in a lot of games. Like I said, the standout moment for me was when you were at like that KKK meeting. That was just really powerful to see in a video game. Something that I really commend Hangar 13 for just pushing some boundaries and trying to tell the story they wanted to tell. That's fantastic. It's just that mission structure was awful. You know, this, you know, take down all these different little mini branches and stuff and ruin their business so that they'll come out of hiding. Like, don't these guys fucking learn? Anytime you come out, you get fucking killed by this Lincoln Clay dude. Like, don't you realize what he's doing? Have you not caught on? You're smart enough to run all these businesses, but you can't figure out that he's tearing you down, so you come out and he just stabs you? Like, come on. So for me, there was a lot of issues with the game. Ending was fantastic, though. But it was still a game that I'd say, like, wait for a sale on, because it's definitely flawed. But, yeah, that game just let me down a lot because I was expecting because they didn't really amend any of the flaws in a way that Mafia 2 had, where Mafia 2 was about the main story, and that was it. There was no side objectives. And people were saying, try to tell a similar story to Mafia 2 in the way where it's emotional and you can really get involved in these characters, but have side objectives. And what does Hangar 13 do? They give you the illusion of side objectives with all these different things you can take down within a district, but they all tie into the main story. You have to do them anyway. So they're not side stuff, they're main stuff. And when you beat the game, you have one side mission for each of the underbosses. So it's like, what the fuck? It's so stupid to me that they missed the ball on what I think was a lot of vocal criticism. Not in the minority for Mafia 2, but that probably would end my list on games that I did not enjoy as much as I expected to.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree on Mafia 3, just so everybody knows, because this will be the first comment on my channel, is why No Man's Sky, and I'm going to be honest, I didn't think No Man's Sky was going to be as good as everybody else thought anyway. So No Man's Sky.
Yeah, same. No Man's Sky was not on this list for me either because I didn't have high expectations anyway. I was excited,
Fairly middling expectations, and I think that it was better than many people gave it credit for and worse than many people said it was going to be. And so to me, it's not that. No, I would agree. Mafia 3 is probably my last one as well. Mafia 3 just, dude, I don't care what. I don't even care if I'm proven wrong. It feels like it was probably released 3 to 6 months early. And even if somebody's like, oh no, we always, you know, like this was our plan to release this broken POS right from the start. Great, but I still don't believe you. There's something about that game feels unfinished. And it's either the fault of the producer of that game, they did a really bad job, or somebody pushed them to release that. And it was not ready for prime time technically, and additionally gameplay.
They're still excusing that game. They're saying that the reason they pushed it out was so that the reveal of Red Dead Redemption 2 didn't overshadow the launch of the game, so they got it out beforehand, so that because you know Take-Two handles both of these games. So that's what the excuse was I heard recently. But you know, you haven't heard fucking shit of Rockstar since that reveal, so it's like, was that really even going to have a heavy impact on Mafia 3 at the end of the day? I don't see the connection, really.
No.
I don't see people saying, I got $60 now. I'm not going to spend this. I'm going to save this until
for a year and maybe two.
2018 fall. And I know people are saying fucking fall 2017. I will eat my words. I don't care.
If they release it on time.
They are not going to. It's Rockstar. They are not going to. It's Naughty Dog. The same exact thing with them. They will not release a game on that first release date. They will delay it.
Yeah, I would agree. And then games we enjoyed more than they thought we would, or than we thought we would. And for me, for sure, starting of the year, Oxenfree. Oxenfree, fucking fantastic indie game. And I would put it up against any other game for game of the year. Matter of fact, it might be. Like, I don't do game of the years very often, but Oxenfree is, Jesus, man. That's the first game where ever when Cadiz was one of the guys who does the occasional video on the channel, and I invited him over and I was like, I'd already beat it. And I was all, man, I need you to play this to see if I'm just crazy, because I can't believe how much I like it. And we started playing and we played it in one sitting and we got done. He's like, man, it's fantastic. Like, I just don't even know any other word to describe that game. It's fucking fantastic. So yeah, I would say Oxenfree. Indie games I expect to like, but that one was just way past. Do you have any that like you were like jumping into and then you're like, holy shit, this is great?
I think one of the first ones that comes to mind, actually, yeah, it was recently, but this is the first one that definitely does come to mind. Gears of War 4. Did not have high expectations for that game. Never been a big Gears fan, but Gears 4 was definitely one of my favorite games this year. I wouldn't say it would be in a game of the year list, but it was definitely one game that if someone came to me and said, I got $60, what shooter should I buy this fall? I'd probably say Gears 4, you know, before I recommend Overwatch, of course. But, you know, it's just that it was a really well-done entire package. You know, you have this great campaign. You have the, you know, horde mode that's always great. And then you have wonderful multiplayer. It's just every part of that game was so well done. Even more impressive because it's a brand new developer who hasn't worked on Gears before. So I give them a lot of credit, the Coalition, for doing what they did with Gears 4, and it definitely was one of the bigger surprises for me. I really did not expect to like that game as much as I did.
Yeah, and for me, another, it's not an indie, but, and I think it's 2016, is Deadly Tower of Monsters. Yeah, I think it's 2016.
That one you love.
Yep. Oh, dude, yeah, I talk about it all the time. Like, Flash Gordon Gauntlet, like, I mean, you know, some of these games, it's by Atlas, and I like Atlas. They're sort of one of those B tier, you know, developer publishers. And when they were like, hey, do you want to cover this game? And I looked at it, I was like, oh yeah, that looks like, you know, something. Headlander is another one that's like a Flash Gordon, you know, neon. And that kind of stuff always reminds me of like childhood when I was growing up watching those old Buck Rogers and shit. But Deadly Tower of Monsters is fantastic. That's another one that just completely surprised me. So fun.
Yeah, I really don't have many indie games on my list.
Well, I have a question for you. What about Forza? Did you expect it to be as good as it was?
Yeah, there was an expectation going into Forza Horizon 3 that I was going to like it because I've heard that that's the franchise that makes people enjoy racing games. And So for me, it was one of those games like I should expect something good, but I didn't expect to get as hooked as I did. But I wouldn't say that really quantifies the list that we're trying to create here, because I did have that expectation of good.
Gotcha.
Not that these games, like, for example, Gears of War 4, where I went in expecting mediocre, but I just kind of went in expecting, like, I don't know if this is going to be good or not. Forza, I at least knew, like, okay, these guys make good racing games. Like, mm-hmm. I know this is going to be good. It just might not be for me. So, yeah, Forza definitely was a surprise, but not like, whoa, that's actually really good. One surprise for me, actually, was Attack on Titan. That was... I'm sorry, that game though, that was some really impressive combat. They fucking nailed it. They shocked the hell out of me. I was like, this is gonna be camera problems, it's gonna be fucking broken, it's gonna be monotonous. I put like 40 hours into it, man. I loved that game. That was surprising to me. I love the anime, but I didn't have high hopes for the game. Because it was one of those animes, I don't know if you've ever watched like TV or a movie, where you're like, how would this play out as a game? Attack on Titan was that anime. I'm like, this would be such a cool idea for a game, but I don't know how they do it.
Right.
Because of the mobility, it seems like it would just stretch a game too thin. They did it so well. They really did. I know they just retold the story of the anime, but the gameplay, man, fantastic. Really impressed me. Did not expect it to be as good as it was.
I'll have to go back and remember what I rated that, because I reviewed it. Wait for a sale, which people need to remember does not mean it was bad. It just means, you know, cost wise. It is crazy that a lot of times we look at those games and go, how would they handle it? Isn't it weird? It's almost always about movement now. Like whenever I talk about like a movie or an anime and I'm like, how would they handle it? It's usually a question around like the mobility, because in anime, everybody's so mobile, you know, it's like, what we're going to talk about in a second. It's like, you know, certain superheroes or whatever. You're like, how are they going to handle all this movement and do it well?
Yeah, because watching like an Attack on Titan anime, you see how narrow the streets are,
right?
And how big these titans are, and you're thinking, how can in a video game you realistically create a narrow street but a giant titan, but actually be the one taking down the titan? How does that work? And they just nailed it with the way the camera angle was when you lock on. Doesn't really collide with anything. I'm not saying the game's perfect, but I was very just impressed with how satisfying it was, too, when you just cut the nape of the neck and you're just zipping between Titan to Titan and just taking them out in quick succession. One of the best feelings in games I've had this year, for sure. It was really just satisfying combat.
That's very cool. I don't get caught up usually in like if I'm going to like something or not, so I actually don't. I guess I would say, okay, I will give this one Abzu. Hmm. I did not expect, you know, I had done the interview with Austin Wintory and like I knew it was probably going to be enjoyable to some people, but I wasn't a huge fan of Journey. I'm not necessarily always a fan of those kind of games. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. Flower, Journey, those kind.
Yeah.
And Abzu's like, you're swimming around with a bunch of fucking fish, and I'm just like, okay, I'm not 100% sure that's going to be my thing, but I was actually really surprised overall by like how enjoyable that was. I think the weird thing is sometimes is the fun you get from a game can be completely different from one title to the other. Like Forza 3's fun is like, you know, Michael Bay over the top, you know, that kind of fun where it's that inspirational, you know, moment, and there's like theme songs running in your head. And then something like Journey, where it's not fun as much as it is just a unique experience. That's, I mean, I don't want to say spiritual, but in some way it is sort of like that kind of feeling, that emotional feeling. Do you have any more for games that you,
This one might catch you as a surprise. Doom. Did not expect Doom to be good. I really didn't.
Really? Not to be good, huh?
Yeah, because I said during, I think it was E3. Yeah, it was E3 2015 when the gameplay was first
revealed. Saw it, yeah.
I said, you know, this looks epic. This looks so exciting. I really want to play this game, but I was like, I feel like it's gonna that excitement of the gory kills and stuff will wear off,
right?
And for my personal expectation level, it did towards the end. I feel the game dragged on a little bit longer than I personally would have liked to, but I know I'm definitely in the minority. A lot of people were really satisfied with the campaign length, so I know it's just me. But for what it was, I loved the game so much. They expected the multiplayer to be the game that, or the mode that carried this game, that brought people into Doom to pick it up. But it was the campaign that got a lot of people. And it surprised me, too. I was thinking, like, okay, this is going to be like a standard corridor shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing huge, but, you know, these big expansive levels, tons of collectibles, secrets. You know, they did a really great job with the campaign, something I didn't expect. Challenge modes, the, I forgot what the name of it was, where you can, like, edit your own levels and stuff. I can't remember.
Snap map?
Snap map, there we go. Yeah. And then, like I said, the multiplayer was also great. So I really had a fantastic time with Doom, which I didn't expect. And especially, I think people are quick to forget, but that was the beginning of the no review copies from Bethesda. And when people were kind of doubting Doom a little bit, and then they did that, it was, I don't want to say sealing the deal, but it was almost like, okay, this might end up being the mediocre game I'm kind of expecting. And it wasn't at all. It wasn't even close to that. Very good game.
Yeah, for me, in a way, Dishonored was the mediocre game.
Really?
Dishonored had a lot of technical issues that sort of bothered me, and so that sort of in that way, it felt a little bit like Dishonored could have waited a little longer before getting released, especially if they're not going to do review copies. Even though I got my whatever. Mm. That's another thing we should talk about one of these days. Is like, so supposedly those review copies are supposed to arrive the day of, right, or the day prior? Is that right?
Prior. Yeah.
Dude, one of my games recently from them, was it Dishonored? Came 3 days early. Like, yeah. So I think what it is they ship it hoping, you know, and maybe I was close to where they shipped it from, you know?
Maybe.
Like, yeah. So it's funny you mentioned Doom because, you know, that's another game you and I have talked about, especially on Ham. I think we talked about it a couple times where it was just sort of surprising. Doom, here's the thing that I want to talk to you about. We'll have to do a separate podcast one of these days where we can talk about. A lot of times a game is set up for a certain difficulty and somebody will say a game went too long or some people say a game is too short, right? You'll hear both sides.
Yeah.
And talking to developers, one of the things that surprises me about them is just how open they are to that, because one of the things they point out is, did a person die more often? And so they experienced the gameplay loop too many times. Mm. And so when they got done, they were like, thank God, where somebody else was just really good and they got done and they were like, oh, it's too short, you know? And so how much of that is difficulty levels? How much of that is as one developer told me, he's like, dude, we made one mistake. There's one game and yeah, I won't say the name. There is one particular game where a lot of people died in a particular event. And because of that, the game got pretty ramrodded by a lot of people for particular things in its end game. And he's like, when that patch came out that fixed that, that complaint literally went away. And so it shows just how much a mistake and a kill that doesn't work out, or the balance on a boss in Final Fantasy 15 is not done right. And suddenly you can have a situation where people are reviewing it much worse because the game, you're experiencing this fight 10 times or something like that. And you're like, what the fuck's going on? Mm-hmm. And somebody else maybe gets through it and you and I might go, wait, what? You had an issue? And you're like, no, you had an issue. And but it really is an issue with the game, like how the game plays out. So it's just very interesting to hear. I was right in the middle of Doom. And so that's why I mention it, because I have a friend who's very, very good. And he's like, man, it was too short. And I'm like, no, it was just right. I was like Goldilocks. And then you're like, nah, it was a little long. And I'm all, I wonder when we died, you know, like how we died. I would love to see the metrics for like where people died the most. And did I just luck past that? And did my friend just run through it? And did you die more there?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's the truth. I'm saying
critical
analysis in games is very enjoyable. So let's move on. We want to talk a little bit about news. The first thing, Nintendo Switch. So you explain this, possibly supporting GameCube?
Yeah, there's for the Wii U, they have a virtual console, uh-huh. Which I'm sure you're aware of. And for those who don't know, it's basically that you can go back and play old games digitally, like on the NES and stuff, but through your Wii U. And so what the Nintendo Switch is apparently doing is supporting GameCube games through this virtual console system, which is really, really exciting. A few games, you know, instantly come to mind that I love, because a lot of people are quick to forget that Nintendo Switch is also a portable console in a way.
Right.
So you can take these awesome GameCube games on the go now. And that excites me beyond belief, because like I say, I have a lot of local best friends and we'll just hang out at each other's houses, and usually you'll catch me with my VD or 3DS, and now it's probably going to be the Nintendo Switch. I'm going to be able to take these console games with me. So seeing them expand that library off the bat, take a really good consumer idea there that people have been asking for a while, is bring GameCubes back, bring GameCube games back. So I'm really excited about that, like, you know, Metroid Prime.
Rogue Squadron?
Yeah, Rogue Squadron, that's a good one. I have a couple of GameCube games still in my closet from my old collection, but, you know, that was just one of my favorite systems. I remember playing, like, Clash of a Ninja for my Naruto fans out there. That was a great fighting game before it became Ultimate Ninja Storm. But, you know, just some really great games there, and I'm excited to see them hopefully support that in some way.
Now, with the virtual, do you think, would it require an online?
That's the thing, is that they're calling it Virtual Console, and I get why, because from what we know, I'm not sure if it's a guarantee or not, but it seems to be using a cartridge, I think.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's a guarantee. Are you drinking the Pitch Black?
Nah, Titanfall 2, Mountain Dew.
Not sponsored.
No,
why? Well, you drank that because my mom just came back from the store, and she brought back Pitch Black, and I had, like, it's one of the first sodas in a while that I've, like, compulsively drank.
Is it good?
Yeah, oh, so good. It's like a berry flavor. It's great.
Okay, I'll try it. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, sponsor. But what the hell was I saying anyway?
You were talking about GameCube and if it's online.
Yeah, if it's online, I think it would make sense, just because it's not like it could be a Xbox One with its backwards compatibility where you still have that disc either way. You can't just take a GameCube disc and somehow fit it into the Nintendo Switch cartridge. That's impossible. Right. So it makes sense. I do hope that they don't hike up the prices like they did with, for example, the NES Classic Edition. I don't know if you saw that.
$600 on eBay.
No, not even eBay. They limited the amount, sold out, obviously. Uh-huh. And then on Walmart, it was $300 after it sold out.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I was just like, that's such a scum move. Like, don't inflate your own product. Just sell it.
Sell it. I didn't hear that, but you know, the Switch, especially seeing it on Jimmy Fallon a couple days ago, even though it, you know, it was one of those situations where it's so controlled, they showed Zelda and it certainly looked like the frame rate was better. It looked like there was a couple things, you know, fixed up. They were showing the physical item and stuff like that. And Reggie, right? Yeah, it's Reggie, isn't it? Reggie was there playing it. I'm gonna just be honest, man, it's the first Nintendo system that I've been excited for forever. Ever, man. Like the GameCube, I think I just missed it because of the Xbox or whatever. I wanted Rogue Squadron, but who didn't, right? I'm stoked for it. Now, the cartridge thing and the size of the 32 gigabytes, it's crunching down games to a pretty small size here in the future, but regardless, I can't wait, man. I'm stoked for it. Like, I want to, and I am stoked for it in a way that is completely 100% prepared for it to not look as good as a Scorpio, an Xbox One, or PS4.
But I'm not expecting
intelligently prepared.
Yeah, and if you have higher expectations than that, it's just unrealistic, because a lot of the speculated specs, that's an interesting quote there.
Speculations, yeah.
But, you know, a lot of those specs that have been speculated upon have been lowballing it, and a lot of the reports that have been coming out of the actual system itself have also stated that the system's not going to be crazy powerful, which I think makes sense, because in order to, it's going to be powerful enough, but you know, it's got a lot of mobile stuff in it, because you're going to be taking, for example, they showed in the trailer, Skyrim on the go.
Yeah.
So I think people need to remember that, and if you have reasonable expectations, not this has to look as good as a Scorpio, but yet be able to take it on the go, unless you want to be fucking carrying around a power brick everywhere you go, that's never going to happen. But I'm excited too.
So let's say, let's look at this for a second. Let's say you and I buy Switch and Skyrim's day one. I don't know if it is, but let's pretend it is.
Okay.
What if it looked as good as the Xbox 360 version of Skyrim? Because the PS3 version of Skyrim was dump. Would you be happy with that? I can't remember if that's a 720p native or if that's a 1080p. But
I played Skyrim on the 360 primarily.
So did I.
Funny enough, I was doing a video and I was looking back on just some of my old Skyrim videos from 2011. Uh-huh. And mind you, this is when I didn't disable resample in my video, so it was a lot more like fuzzy looking. And
And
plus it was from the 360, so it looked even worse. And then YouTube compresses it. So from what I saw, though, I wasn't like, ugh, God, this is terrible looking. So that's what I was playing on, obviously a little bit better looking, because it would the resample would be disabled and stuff. I would be fine with that, really. I would be, because you're taking a game the size of Skyrim on the go, and I don't think people realize the technical feat of that. That's right. Really impressive to me. So I'd be fine with that.
And do you know what gets me more excited, dude? Like, Bully being released on Android last week. Like, yeah, I bought that awesome thing. I'm not going to play it, probably, because I've got Bully on 85 systems. But I bought it instantly to support the movement of those of we've now got KOTOR, which I have beat on Android. So we've got KOTOR, we've got Bully, we've got GTA 3, we've got a couple different GTAs, actually, I think. So dude, yeah, mobile and Skyrim is, I don't play mobile like you. I barely do, actually. But the ability to have it is just, like, to me, that's awesome, because I know there's so many people out there who are, you know, have a long commute to work or whatever, and they need to play it. And then you wanted to talk about Spider-Man, so the Spider-Man trailer.
Yeah, just briefly, just to toss it
this
out.
This is from Insomniac, right?
No, this is actually, this is like, I'm talking the movie trailer. I don't know if you've
seen it.
That's why
okay.
I don't know if this has anything to do with the games cast, but...
Let's talk about it.
It's, I was not for yet another Spider-Man overhaul. I was like, just leave him be for now. He's my favorite superhero, but I was like, you know, there's been too many changes between Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, and now that was that his name?
I don't know. Andrew Garfield is definitely the second run.
And now this kid, I don't even know his name, but I was just not for it until I saw the trailer. I was like, you know what, this looks really good. I was really happy, because they Spider-Man is sarcastic and funny in a way, but, you know, some of them are like, okay, we got to get as corny as fucking possible to nail what Spider-Man is, because he's that, you know, knee-jerk reaction type of guy. And I'm glad they didn't take that route. You know, for example, right when the trailer begins and he's sitting there in a bank being robbed, and he's like, hey, guys, right here. And like, they're all wearing Avengers masks. Like, that was funny. That was actually funny.
I remember that. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And so, you know, stuff like that. I really appreciate that type of humor. But it seems to also have some emotion. You didn't see, I'm not saying I'm all about the action, but you didn't see too much action in the trailer, where it makes me wonder if they're going to pull a Amazing Spider-Man 1 and just really overdo telling the story and have zero action, which is, you know, one of, obviously, the biggest highlights of a superhero movie. But from what I saw, I'm definitely happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it too. And so, okay, I was a Tobey Maguire fan, so when they were like Andrew Garfield and I can't remember her name, and at the time Gwen, whatever fucking her name is, his girlfriend at the time, they were like, so those movies came out, and I'm going to be honest, I didn't give them their due till they were done. And then one day, I don't know what happened, I'd seen them a couple times and never really bought into them. I went back and rewatched them, and now I respect them for a different tact on Spider-Man. So I'm excited for this new one, but I'm treating them the same way I did the Andrew Garfield ones, where it's different, obviously, than what I liked Tobey Maguire I dug, even in the bad Spider-Man, which three. To me was three. Yeah. I still loved, he looked like exactly Spider-Man. What I thought Peter Parker and Spider-Man would look. Right. So,
I agree.
So to me, Andrew Garfield was like, whoa. And, you know, I had forgotten that he could be a douche. So I didn't really like the new ones. And then later I went and watched them. I'm like, you know what? Like, I get it now. I get that character. So I like them all. Mm-hmm. So I'll jump into this new one it's possible to like this new one. I probably won't be a person who goes to the movie and gets excited. I'm very, when it comes to superhero movies, I'm very usually unimpressed the first time, because there's a lot of Michael Bay. We need to blow the biggest thing up as possible. And you're like, well, what's actually really going on? And then you have to watch it five or six times. And then you're like, okay, I now like the movie. I'm not a big spectacle person, because shiny shit doesn't impress me much anymore. You know, I've seen enough of it. Right. So I want something like you said. You were like, you know, maybe Amazing Spider-Man 1 grounded it too much. I want a mix. And if you're saying that it sounds like you're saying this new one looks like it might be both, like a somewhat of a grounded, but also some action and some comedy, then it might be the better one out of all of them. You know, mean, yeah, I'm excited to see it. But let's talk about the Spider-Man game for a second, because so
wealth
Insomniac,
of potential.
Right?
Wealth
right?
Of potential.
I am right. Insomniac, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, wealth of potential. But let's talk about a game that I barely played, and it sounds like you loved, which is Sunset Overdrive, which is also them. They handled movement in that very well, correct?
Yeah.
Would you say okay?
All right.
So do you think, knowing what you know about Sunset Overdrive, do you actually believe that we're gonna have a? I think it was Spider-Man 2 that had really good web slinging. There was one.
Two is like the standout Spider-Man game. Every developer since has tried to replicate.
Right. Do you feel in your heart of hearts, in your little Maddie beating heart of hearts, it's still more optimistic than my blackened one? Do you believe that they'll hit it, the movement?
Movement-wise, yeah. It's hard to say for the rest of the game because the superhero game is always it's a superhero game, and you don't know if they're going to take the Batman Arkham route where they're going to say, we're fucking making a video game, or the every Spider-Man developer route, which has been, let's try to make Spider-Man 2 again. And have drastically failed. It's like Spider-Man 2. I don't know if anyone's ever popped open their PS2 or Xbox lately and tried Spider-Man 2. But it's aged horribly. And that's why these games have been colossal failures that have tried to imitate Spider-Man 2. But I'm getting off track. Yeah, movement-wise, absolutely. Because I loved Sunset Overdrive. Because what it did was it started out small and you were like, huh, this move is not as good as I saw in the trailers. But that's because you haven't unlocked the, bunch of different things that expand that movement system more and more and more, where you can start air dashing, you can double air dash, you can grind, you can boost while you're grinding, you can wall run, I think. All these different things that just expand the game more and more, where Insomniac has always had a grip on great video game movement between recently Ratchet and Clank, which came out this year, or before that, Sunset Overdrive. They have always had movement. So I feel there's no reason to think otherwise. It's just, will they innovate on what has plagued, I think, other Spider-Man games? Where I think Beenox, with their previous Spider-Man games, has had that great locomotion with web swinging, but it's the open world that they've made that's been just horrible.
Oh my god! Remember, it was like you were a bad guy simply because you couldn't get to a crime quick enough, and you were like
the hero villain system or something like that. It was so stupid. I was just like,
wow.
I remember tweeting. It was one of the few times I pleaded at a developer over Twitter and was like, please just fix this. Just get rid of the system overall, because every 5 seconds, you got a new fucking
open world bad guy.
Yeah, that you have to take care of. And if you don't, you're an awful person, and you're going to start getting shot at or something. It's so stupid. I don't know. I don't know how I platinum that game.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Neither do I. A serious case of iron lung, because there's no way I could play. I mean, the thing that happened with the Superman games is that it seems like one of the earlier ones got the locomotion right, which I think was 2, got the swinging right. I always hear there's one particular one. I don't remember. I played them all. But then, like you said, and I've never heard it put this way before, so I'm going to probably use this in every discussion post this one. But you said Arkham Knight, they just decided, fuck it, we're going to actually make a Batman video game versus like fan service or versus like an extension. And that is actually true. That is exactly the proper way of saying that Arkham Knight versus City versus Origins versus versus Asylum is that, in a weird way, Arkham Knight was sort of like, here's a video game based on it. Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I mean, I want to, I'll play the hell out of it, because I don't have a favorite. Thor might be my favorite. I don't know. I don't really have a favorite superhero, but when it comes to games, Spider-Man's probably the best one other than Batman that feels playable, what you could play, and make it fun. So, and then we wanted to talk about games that I guess I want to talk about, our surprise, maybe, and maybe it's just my surprise, but surprise about titles getting content and patches that have really changed, either changed people's thoughts of a game or just changed my own opinion of what I was either worried about. And I had mentioned these Division, Hitman, and The Crew. And I don't know if you've played any of those. When I was mentioning
Division, I have. Hitman I started up recently, but I didn't want to get fully invested. But I mean, because I wanted to play it to compare it to Dishonored 2 in the terms of stealth gameplay and level design and stuff, just, for my own knowledge. And I'm really impressed with Hitman. I definitely want to – that's a game that's on the backlog that I want to get into at some point.
Well, let's talk about – let's just jump into that one. The thing that surprises me, it was dissed on for being episodic, which I get, right?
Because
you think episodic is going to be a ripoff, right? And here's – I mean, they've done so much. It's like – they have things to make you go back and play old levels with exclusive targets. They have amazing level design. And I think it's one of those games where, we were talking about a game that maybe we enjoyed more than we thought we would. I knew I was going to enjoy Hitman, so that wasn't on my list. But I know you haven't got to play a bunch of it. But to see a company sort of prove some of the naysayers, including maybe myself a little bit, wrong is pretty cool. Like, yeah, there's something awesome about that.
I've always appreciated that feeling because a lot of people have this sense of pride. Like, I said, I hated this. I have to hate this.
Right. And I'm right.
I'm totally fine, especially with my opinion having to be out here on the web where it'll be that is my opinion until I say otherwise, really.
Right.
I'm fine with being proven wrong. You know, I'm fine with saying, hey, you were right. I'm glad I'm wrong, you know, because we're getting a better game because of it, right? I'm enjoying something because of that. So feel free to prove me wrong. I agree, though. Yeah, Hitman looks great. The Division was one that I've gone back to a decent amount. Last time I played it was August, though. Haven't played it since. Just too many other games I want to get my hands on. And I played it on PS4, so I was getting DLC very late compared to the Xbox One users. But from what I've read, it seems to have really spiked people coming back on an impressive amount. And you said it was like launch numbers, pre-launch numbers.
Or it was something like there was some news, you know, news websites or whatever that were saying, like, it might have been like post. It was something crazy. I know the Survival, which is the newest DLC, which like adds some PvE and some crazy randomness to it. It just absolutely, like, you go to Steam and the numbers are just. And then I talked to people, and I played once, twice now, actually, gone in and played for a couple hours. And dude, like, it's one of those games where it got released, it was pretty okay. Patches didn't do so well. Some people didn't like the way the patches worked. And this is one of those times where you get to look back at a title and go, the continued support has made that game fantastic. Like, it's a secret game almost, because like, you and I may not ever get a chance, except occasionally go back because we're reviewing, right? So we don't always get a chance. But it's this secret little game that I find out that an extraordinary number of people are still playing, and there's something really fascinating about it, you know.
Yeah,
and
like I said, another example is Rainbow Six Siege. That's a game that launched, I thought was great. Really enjoyed that game a lot.
Yeah.
But it didn't launch that successful, and then they made a couple of big updates, and apparently Ubisoft themselves shared their user charts, and it showed low numbers around launch. Then they did the patch, and it's like that, and it's double their player base now. Like, this game is huge. Everyone's playing Siege now, and it's great because that's a fucking amazing shooter. Really like that game a lot. That's one game because I put so much time into it. I played it every night, but I really got into that around December, and it's one of those games where this is kind of why I don't like doing Game of the Year list, but why I do as well. I kick myself for not putting it on my list because that would have been in my top three. Fucking amazing game, but I never did. I wish I did, though.
Yeah, it's funny because it is. I liked it. Sounds like you liked it both when it started, and I liked it for what it was. And, you know, there were issues.
Yeah, but I played up until about April, I don't want to say.
But Ubisoft, they're like on three of these: The Division, Siege, and then The Crew. So The Crew came out, the original, and I destroyed it. It was not a good game upon release. And
it was not.
And it was not. It was fucking horrible. It had graphically, it like there wasn't even rear view mirrors. It was just, it was a nightmare.
Reminds me of Mafia 3's rear view mirror.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden they released the I can't remember the name of the DLC, Worldwide or something. I can't remember, but they literally rewrote the graphics engine and added stuff. And I went in and played it. And it was one of those moments where if you had told me this was a sequel on a different console, I would have believed you.
Wow.
Like that is the level of change from when that fucker first released, and I was like, guys, this thing is a trap. It doesn't look that good. It's somewhat fun here and there, you know, because I never try to diss on a game completely unless it's Cartoon Network Battle Crashers, which I just did a review of. It was one of those games where it was like, dude, it's fantastic. And if you get a chance to play it, I would, Maddie, if I were you, because I think you would love it.
One of the trends we do want to note here, though, is that all three of these games we've talked about are from Ubisoft.
Yeah, that's what I said. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I must not have heard that.
No, that's all right.
That's really important to note, though.
It is.
That it's great to see these games gain in population and be what they were supposed to be. But it's also, if Ubisoft has learned, it seems, with Assassin's Creed, that if we have to wait, we can wait, you know?
Yeah, right. That's a good point. Yeah.
So it's just weird that all three of these games have come from them. I mean, I respect them as a company, though. They seem to make decisions that sit in between consumers and making a lot of money, because I think they make money no matter fucking what. They seem to just
be. So are you saying that you feel it's... Are you saying... Are you saying that it's sort of in a weird way a positive and a negative? Like, it's a positive that they fix it, but it's a negative that they released it that way?
Yeah, because, like, okay, for example, The Division I really liked. That was, like, I said in my review, and I still hold it to this day, that was my Destiny.
Mine too.
Destiny I hated, but Division was the one I could really get behind because that was a universe for me. I love post-apocalyptic games. And it was also just, I thought, a much better game in general. And so to see it be a good game for me personally on launch, but to become an even better game now where even more people are playing it, excites me. But then you got something like The Crew, which I agree was fucking just, everything about it, man. Because as I stated before, Forza Horizon 3, I did not like racing games. And that game was just one I hammered home. I was like, fuck this genre, I'm done. But, you know, to see it get overhauled like that and look great is awesome. It's awesome that they're supporting it still. It's about to be 2017. That game came out in, I think, the end of 2014. So that's awesome, too, that they're doing that.
Yeah, it has an expansion this month where your cops, where you're now, or it was cops last, there's a new expansion. That's all I know.
Must be a player base, then, if they're still supporting it. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I like how you pointed out, though, that technically, yeah, it is a positive and a negative at the same time. I mean, you know, it sucks to say that, but it's cool. Yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, Ubisoft doesn't get bought out by Vivendi and they continue to do this, you know, as we move forward. So the last thing we wanted to talk about is, like, what we're looking forward to game-wise in 2017, or at least here in the future. Is there anything that's, like, popping up on
You can go first. I've been going first a lot, by all means, man.
Mech Warrior, but I don't know if that'll be delayed, but I think Mech Warrior's 2017. Hmm. And Battletech.
Okay.
That's from Harebrain Studios, the guys who made, like, the Shadowrun games, the Shadowrun RPGs.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, and that's the turn-based, like, and, you know, the creator...
Didn't that just go on backwards compatibility? Shadowrun?
No.
Or am I thinking of a different...
You might be... you're probably
thinking... There's one on 360. Am I thinking of a different...
That is a different Shadowrun, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The Shadowruns I'm talking about are RPG games that came out for PC just recently. They're like Icewind Dale, Baldur's Gate style.
Okay.
Tyranny.
Cool.
They're like Tyranny.
Cool.
So Harebrain Studios, they're fucking awesome. And they like, the owner, Jordan, the CEO, used to work for Microsoft, but prior to that, he created Battletech. So this is the guy who created the entire giant robot phase of D&D and of video games. So then he went to Microsoft and created Mech Warrior for the 360. That was the Xbox original, right? The Xbox original had Mech Warrior, I think. And so the dude knows what he's doing, obviously. And I cannot wait for that. I think that's just, like, that kind of stuff always intrigues me because of world building and stuff.
Yeah.
And then in all honesty, you sort of killed my soul because you reminded me, but I was looking towards Red Dead, but now you're like, that's stupid because I don't think anybody
I think it's pretty stupid. They have a track record.
Like, yeah. And do they even have a track record, or is it now their status quo?
Yeah.
That is their status quo.
We're going to try, but this isn't really going to happen. We're just giving you something so you're happy.
Yeah. So
thing. So
I want that. Like, I can't even describe to you how much I want it. And then I guess I don't know when the Star Wars from what's her name? She left Uncharted.
Oh, Visceral.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So here's the thing. I guess I'll just say about 2017 is this. Like, the entire industry seems to be going under weird shit's happening. Like, games are being announced and released a couple months later. Then you have games that are announced and are on time, games that are announced that aren't. It seems like in the past, things held to a little bit, like, you and I would know about a game in the proper way. PR would be notified in the proper way.
They're trying to avoid leaks by going, like, bang, 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 like, really fast with things.
So 2017 is in itself what I'm looking forward to, because I have there's stuff that you and I bet have no clue is even being made, that, like, if any company, probably Microsoft, because they're known for this, but if any company's just going to announce, Bethesda has done it before, haven't they, with Fallout 4. So I'm stoked. Like, I just have no clue
that's the exciting thing, is that, you know, these conversations are without a doubt subject to change, because we're talking about, like, what we're looking forward to now, what we know about 2017. Think about at the beginning of 2016 about, like, all the games you love now and have played now that you had no idea about, that you didn't see as much about towards the beginning of that year, so, or even the year beforehand. So for me, the game I'm looking most forward to out of what we know so far is without a doubt Persona 5.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. I cannot put into words, man, because I am one of the people who have played three endlessly, four endlessly. Endlessly is an exaggeration for three, but I played it a lot. But four endlessly. Four fucking endlessly. So five, I am holding to a ridiculously high standard. I have to simmer down, but I can't because I've heard great things about it because it's already out in Japan. I've heard it's amazing. So I already know there's something great there. I simply cannot wait. They're expanding on what it looks like what made 4 great. 4 had, you know, fantastic cast, great camaraderie between that cast, a unique plot. It really embraced the world it was in. Amazing soundtrack. I don't know if they're going to be able to beat 4's soundtrack, dude. I really can't see it happening, but if they do, I will fucking be mind blown. But there's just a lot of standards to break to make 5 better than 4, and it doesn't really have to be better than 4. It could be as good as 4, but I mean, it's Persona, so it's going to be, I think, good anyway. But man, I'm really happy about it. I'm really happy about it.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Matt happy about something. That was awesome, because all the other times you've been like, yeah, yeah, and then I fucking, you're like, Persona 5, boom, and you're like me in a review. You're on that. I was just like, that's why I was so quiet. I was like, okay, just let him go, man. That's cool. I wish we lived near each other, because that's one of the things. I know nobody who likes those games. And, really? I'm interested in it, obviously, but I never get that kind of response about like a Persona. If I'm like, hey, Persona 5 looks interesting, people will be like, what's that?
Persona is one of the biggest Japanese gaming franchises that I think a lot of people, that's like their, I can't remember the phrase, but it's like what gets them into that genre.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually kind of surprising that you don't know that many people, but I am not saying Persona is an obscure kind of game, but I like those types of games that are, you know, maybe a hidden gem. I really like getting behind those games and supporting them. An example of that would be Danganronpa, which is another one I don't know if you've ever played that series, man, but if you got some time, that is the one of my favorite series of all time. It is definitely in probably my top 20 favorite games, Danganronpa 1 and 2. They are some of the best video games I've played. A mix of puzzles and mystery and a visual novel, but exploration. It's just a very, and I mean, some of the best written cast of characters ever, man. It is a fantastic game, but they're coming out with a third one this year, so I'm really looking forward to that. But what I was getting off track on is that, you know, I love supporting these games that maybe don't get as much attention as what we've been talking about a lot this cast, these big AAA games, these Ubisoft games and stuff. I like supporting those types of games too. Another example is Divinity Original Sin 2.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Came out this year in early access, but you know, next year is the big full launch.
Yeah,
and I simply can't wait for that either. But that's also like one of the more old school RPGs, which definitely has support. It was crowdfunded, so it definitely has a lot of support and fans. But I'm just saying that I like focusing on those titles a lot too.
Yeah, you know what? It just dawned on me, since we got a little bit of downtime in like December, January, we totally should do something weird, like Carrick challenges Maddie to play this.
Oh, geez.
Maddie challenges Carrick to play this, because, dude, there's some weird shit that I know you haven't played that I like, and I just realized like two or three of those, I'm like, I have no fucking clue what he's talking about.
That would be amazing. Just walking each other through stuff. Like, I'll walk you through Danganronpa. You'll be like, man, what the fuck is this?
We need to talk about that after a podcast or something, and just and see if we can figure that out, because that would be a hilarious video to be like, okay, Carrick is now playing this game he's never played. Has no, like, because I'd be Twittering you going like, what in the fuck is going on? Like, games like Tyranny is also another game that isn't a triple, but it's a kickstarted. I think that's the weird thing that we're getting into now too, is like, there's games that are B tier developers that have some help here and there, or they just get by, right? Like a Platinum, which is known for some cool stuff but also releases Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah,
and then you have AAA, which get their own PR, and then you have like these companies that are kickstarted, which obviously they're supported enough to create something, like Obsidian has done that. But yeah, it's weird, because there's so many games now that it's so weird, because you and I could basically just say, have you played this? Have you played this? Have you played this? And there'd be a very good chance we could talk for like 2 hours about games neither one of us have played that are still somewhat popular with like large groups of people. And I think that's really cool. Like, I mean, it's like Persona. I know Persona is really popular, but just none of the people I talk to play it. Mm-hmm. But I know that like a group around you if they're built because of their.
Not to interrupt you, but like, no, you know, for me, I've always been that, just that, like you, I'm that guy, you know, no one really else around me does. I just became friends with someone this year though, last year. And you know, he's now one of my best friends, but you know, he's also a fan of like JRPGs and stuff. So he's played like Danganronpa Persona. he's like that missing piece in my friendship life that I have been missing forever. Yeah. He's like the guy, he's the sounding board for like all the Japanese titles and stuff that we play. But yeah, it's very hard to come across that type of stuff. Because even I've had a couple of friends who do like some Japanese games. But most of the time it's hard to come across. My favorite thing to do is when people go like, oh, games for fucking weebs, dude, that's a stupid Japanese game. And I'm like, hey, what are your thoughts on Pokemon by chance? Oh, dude, I love it, man. Oh, well, that's funny. Do you want to know who made that game?
Yeah.
Or Kingdom Hearts is another one because it meshes in Disney. So it's not Japanese anymore, clearly. And then I tell people, oh, well, Square Enix made it. They're a Japanese developer. What? Oh, yeah. Metal Gear Solid. Oh, what? Like, it's I get a kick out of it every time.
Yeah, the sooner you remove yourself from the shackles of like that ignorance, the better.
Yeah, I will admit, because I was the same way with strategy games. I was like, fuck strategy.
Oh, gotcha.
Fuck, you know, I can't stand it. Yeah, I just want to play. Give me the game. And then I tried XCOM Enemy Unknown. And I was just like, what was I thinking? This is a great game. This is a fantastic genre. And it's broken me into so many different games I loved. I probably wouldn't have played Persona if I never played XCOM Enemy Unknown, because they're both strategy. So
yeah, they're like gatekeepers. You know, they... Yeah, and you know, once you get past a gatekeeper title that like unlocks the gate for all these others, you'd be like, "Oh, Christ!" I like XCOM is a good one because I think a lot of people find aliens easier to understand than demons or whatever, you know, like a Persona thing, or you know, and so they're like, "Oh, I can do aliens," and then they play it and they're all, "Wait, you mean this other game is sort of like that?" Oh yeah, it's like that, and they're like, "Okay, well then I'll check that out." So, yeah. Do we have anything to add to this podcast before we...
No, man. I think we covered all the bases. That was a great talk.
Yeah, for sure. As always, I want to thank you for coming on.
Of course.
He's got some very cool stuff coming up in you know, January, February. Keep watching his channel. Reviews are coming for Last Guardian some point when he can finally put down Final Fantasy. Whenever
should
that
be
is.
Soon. Should
wait,
be soon.
Wait, you have that and Dead Rising?
Yes.
Yeah,
I got about like 40 hours of reviews to do.
Yeah, exactly. So you should be seeing those on his channel. And I think lately the only thing I've done is Cartoon Network Battle Crashers, one of the worst games ever made.
I have to watch that.
Dude. Hey, man, Open Critic actually posted like my tweet or posted my review and an excerpt from it. And I'm surprised they found the non-X-rated version of the excerpt, because it's from start to finish just me going like, how the fuck does this get made? Like, how it is actively like Cartoon Network hates children. Like,
oh,
it is,
my God.
Oh no, it's that bad. I'm like, it is quite literally one of the worst games not only have I ever played, but it would be like imagine a bad Avengers movie. You take all these IPs, right? You take these amazing IPs and then you give them $10 to make a movie. That is what happened.
Oh,
with this.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. Wow. That's what happened with this, is like they gathered, you know, Uncle Grandpa, they grabbed all these, you know, Steven Universe and these
it's
bigger
like that Smash Bros kind of game, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's more like 2D, 3D. I keep calling it Three Dirty Doors because I'm a Saturn fan, but Streets of Rage, the original Double Dragon, where you're going side to side, but it's the worst graphics, barely any animation. And listen to this. Cartoons are known for two things. Animation is known for two things, the animation and the voices.
Yeah.
And this has no voices and barely any animation. And so
what?
You're just like, and when I get to voice, I'm like,
it's one of those games that's so bad you can't look away. Like, you had to see it through.
It was, yeah, it was a train wreck. Like, somebody's like, I want to thank you for playing this. And I'm like, thank me. This was one of the greatest games I've ever, because my brain was just constantly going like, it's as bad as I think it is. Like, and when I think it couldn't get worse, like, animations don't play or like sound effects are, like the sound of a Staples air gun for cleaning out your computer for a flamethrower. It's like ch-ch-ch-ch-ch for a flamethrower. And I'm like, what the fuck? What's going on? Like,
I gotta watch this. Yeah, I gotta watch this.
Anyway, thanks everybody for jumping in. I appreciate it. Thanks as always to Matt for stopping by. And you guys will see us doing some stuff in the future as
Absolutely.
Well. Peace out, everybody.
Peace.